Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Stacy Ross, Jake Heaps, Curtis Rogers on the board here with you, and Tarek in helping out. You guys, let me tell you what, weekends are significantly less stressful when you're not watching a Seahawks game. That Sunday just hits different when you can just relax and watch the Chiefs and the Raiders try to battle it out, watch the Packers fall to the Indianapolis Colts. Thank you, Indy. Thank you, Philip Rivers. Thank you, all of you guys. But that doesn't mean that the rest of the Seahawks season and week is going to be stress-free. Now, you don't have a game until Monday night, so the Seahawks get a nice, long kind of mini bye week, 10 days. That still extends this week. They're going to be facing off with a stretch of games against the NFC East. That starts with the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday night, leading the NFC East, by the way, Curtis, 3-7-1. What a record. There's a lot of things that you can establish in the next couple weeks, and Jake had a really good point with it, and I'll throw to him in just one second. But before we do, the Seattle Seahawks were not fortunate. It is a really good thing that they got the win that they did against the Arizona Cardinals, because you feel better about these next 4 weeks. And you know that after beating the Cardinals, you can go in and you can get a win against the Eagles, the Giants, the Jets, and Washington, and be able to point back and say, hey, but we did also beat this great offense over here. And so these next couple weeks can be about something else besides just getting a game in the win column. It gets to be about cohesion. It gets to be about getting things to gel, Curtis, and it gets to be about kind of getting off on the right foot again, right? It's a chance to reset. Jake called this your chance at a preseason. And what he means by that isn't like, hey, here's a stretch of easy wins, easy games, and you get a chance to handle this. What he meant was, hey, here's a chance to do what you didn't get a chance to do in the offseason, which is get chemistry on defense, Curtis. And now you have a chance to do that.
Yeah, you absolutely do have a chance to do it. And these games, I think you can shake off some of those cobwebs that we saw Seattle sort of encounter in games against the Rams and the Bills, and even that first Cardinals game too. You know, the, like you said, Stacy, the 3-6-1 Eagles leading the NFC East. That's your opponent here coming up on Sunday. That is an opportunity that the Seahawks cannot pass up. Really, these next four games are opportunities that if they do let any of these slip, that is going to be just brutal for their odds in the NFC West race, which even right now they're not in to win the division. It's still an uphill battle, but I mean, these four games, if you win all four, you're 11-3 going up against two divisional opponents to end the game, or to end the season, I should say. And that Rams game, if you don't have that circled on your calendar, if you're a Seahawks fan,
yep,
or really anybody watching this NFC West race, do so now, because that game is going to have, I think, a level of importance that we saw last year in Week 17 going up against the 49ers. I think this one could easily decide it in the NFC West in Week 16. But to get to that point, Seattle has to take care of business over these next 4 weeks.
And taking care of business, the focus is obviously on defense. Cut number two, Pete Carroll saying the defense had been building towards something like that Cardinals game.
Seems like we took a big step forward this week. It started last week, we did, but with some stuff got away from us. Still kept the points down somewhat last week, our guys really, they've been together enough now. You know, I've been saying it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while because it just has felt like that. There's been too many loose ends that haven't been cleaned up, and the guys tightened everything down. We didn't have to do anything special. Kenny threw a really good plan at him to keep, you know, to keep kind of control of the edges. That worked out great, and we played a really disciplined, tough, you know, night of football. It was really fun to watch happen.
Gotta love Carroll's interviews on the Pete Carroll Show with Danny and Gallant. Always lets one or two
spicy
things. Always. Going, kind of building off of this, he says in cut one, this is going to be the foundation now for the rest of the year.
We took a step forward. We don't have to lose another game, you know. We don't have to give any games up. We can just, if we do it right, do it 1 week at a time, continue to hammer the football, everything will fit together. You know, we can throw the ball well whenever we need to, but the balance that creates for our football team and the attitude that it represents is where the championship comes from. And we have to see if we can exactly capture the mentality, the expectations, and those standards for, you know, this week. It's just this week, but I'm really excited about it. I hope our fans are too. We have a chance to, you know, do something here.
Now, in my mind, Curtis, what he means by the foundation is specifically with being able to have a little bit more of a balanced offense, and we've talked about our feelings about that. It's really fun to see that powerful run game. You and I and Jake would all love to see Russell Wilson throw the rock anytime, oh, right? Yeah. We're always down for that. But specifically on defense, being physical, communicating, those things are all really important. And I'm going to love to see Russell Wilson throw 5 touchdowns in the Eagles and 6 touchdowns against the Giants and a couple touchdowns against the Jets. And that's all going to be fantastic. What I really need to see, though, and what Seahawks fans in this organization are going to need to see, Curtis, is the defense shut down these teams, because your offense is not a strength of any of these teams. If I look at these 4 upcoming weeks, Eagles, Giants, Jets, Washington, the strongest individual unit might be Washington's defense. So you have a chance for your defense, Seattle, to get right against these guys.
Yeah, and I would say, looking at kind of what you said there, Stacey, what you want to see from the Seahawks and what you need to see from them, we all want to see Russell Wilson throw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. But I think what we need to see from them is improvement with this defense, and not just improvement, but also the ability to spring forward what we saw against the Cardinals. I think that's what we need to see. I think we also need to see the running game get going mm-hmm. the way they did on Thursday night. It's great to throw it as much as Russell Wilson has, and to be honest, I think that is where Seattle can be the most successful team they can be. But it sure would be nice to get a consistent effort out of this run game just to give Russell Wilson a spell or two, you know, to kind of make it so that, hey, you don't have to wear yourself out in getting this team to the playoffs and wear yourself out getting this team to win in the playoffs, too. It's one thing to just get there, but to actually win and get past the divisional round, which has kind of become the mountaintop that Seattle's been rolling the ball up, and it keeps rolling back on them every single year. But I think right now, these 4 games, and when we get Jake back here, we can get his take on it. But yeah, it is kind of like a preseason in the middle of the season. These are 4 very winnable games against 4 very easily beatable teams. I think anything less than 4-0 would be a disappointment.
Most especially if that loss comes. Like, you don't want to be the team to give the Jets their first win. And it sounds harsh to say, hey, you got to go 4-0. But you've also got yourself into this corner, Seattle. You had a chance. You had the last undefeated record in the NFC, and then you dropped 3 of 4. And so you kind of put yourself in a hole to where now you need to go 4-0. You need to prove that you're the top team in not just the NFC, but that you're a Super Bowl contender. And I still think they're a little bit in limbo. And I know that some people aren't going to love to hear that. And 710-710 on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, do you think that they're really a contender? Do they need to win these next 4 games to prove that to you? Or do you believe they're already there? When we had Brady Henderson of ESPN on with us, Curtis, we asked him whether or not the Seahawks were a contender or a pretender, and he said they're somewhere in between, and I keep going back to that because I think it's still kind of relevant. This is where you start to inch forward. You took a big step forward with the Cardinals, a win against any one of these individual teams from the NFC East in the AFC East, in the case of the Jets, aren't going to do a ton, like the same kind of big step the Cardinals could give you. But you've now got yourself in a corner where you need to win, right? There's a lot of doubt that you can bring on yourself when you drop these, and it may not be fair, but that's kind of how it's going to be. So I think that gets started with the Eagles. I want to see a great performance by the offense, yes. But you're also going to get Shaquille Griffin back. I'm interested to see what that defensive back room is going to look like. Maybe DJ Reed gets a little more work out there. Trey Flowers looking pretty good. So, it's going to be interesting, and I liked Jake's, and again, like you said, we'll get Jake connected here in just a moment. I did really like his "the next 4 weeks of the preseason you never had" comment, and I don't want that to get misconstrued as it's an easy stretch of weeks. It's supposed to be about You never got a chance, ever, no team, got a chance to build chemistry and got a chance to get right. And you normally don't get a get right chance, especially not over the course of a month from November 30th to December 20th. You don't get a get right chance that late in the year. You have it this year, right? You're given a chance.
Not just these four games, but also you get 11 days to prepare for these four games.
Or
11 days to prepare for the Eagles. It's not like this is, you know, just a short week you're coming up here. You get an entire week. We're still a week away from game day.
Yeah.
Where the Seahawks will play this Eagles team that is sorely hurting, that there's question marks as to whether or not Carson Wentz is even going to be the starter anymore, whether or not Jalen Hurts is going to get those opportunities for Philadelphia. Doug Peterson, he's snapping at people. I mean, this is a Philadelphia team that is coming into this game very wounded. And despite the fact that they are leading the NFC East, it is fool's gold to say that they're actually, you know, a contending team. They're just leading the NFC East because the rest of the division is so bad. It's so historically bad. This is not an impressive team by any stretch of the imagination. Seattle has every right to go into Lincoln Financial Field this weekend and just have their way with Philadelphia because, I mean, I look at these two teams on paper and what they've accomplished this season. It shouldn't be a contest at all. And, you know, Monday night, we're going to see the Seahawks team and whether or not they'll be able to take what they learned against Arizona and be able to apply that to Philadelphia. And Philadelphia is a place where the Seahawks have had plenty of success. Last year they won there twice. It's been a long time since they've lost in Philadelphia, actually. So I think it's just setting up for a Seattle victory on Monday. I know we're a week away and there's still a lot that can happen between now and then, but I would be stunned if the Seahawks don't come away with a victory over Philadelphia.
Let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question number one, Stacey, is there any one thing or person to blame for a canceled Apple Cup?
I want to say yes, the Pac-12 and Larry Scott. I have no reasoning, Curtis. There's no reason that I can blame him per se that's not a little bit of a stretch because it's an unfortunate situation for anyone. And college football across the country has been an issue. Any Power 5 conference has been struggling so far. So it's not really fair to blame him. It feels like because the Pac-12 started on such shaky ground with their scheduling that it never felt like they had a lot of control at all over the situation, whether it be with their own plans for scheduling or backup plans or whatever it was. So the real answer is no. The true answer is no. And I know that you're mad that there's no Apple Cup, you, the general you, and you might be wanting to point fingers, but the answer is no. I want it to be Larry Scott, though.
That's all nice and dandy. I'm going to say it's Larry Scott's fault because they scheduled a Pac-12 schedule this year with no sort of out, with no way of making up these games. And had they been able to do that, had they been able to schedule really any kind of bye week in there, I think we would be seeing an Apple Cup. It wouldn't be in any sort of limbo as it is right now. It's currently canceled. It's currently a no contest. Had there been any sort of bye week between the two schools, maybe they could have rescheduled it for then. I think there are certain games on the Pac-12 schedule that you just simply cannot afford to lose. And I call them the heritage rivalries, the Apple Cup being one of them, USC-UCLA being another, Oregon-Oregon State, Arizona-ASU. Those, I think, are the heritage rivalries of the Pac-12. And any football season that doesn't have a single one of those or is missing any one of those, to me, it's not a complete season. And even though this season was going to have 6-7 games between the teams, it would have felt much more complete. You could have dotted the I's and crossed the T's if there were an Apple Cup in there. And right now, I mean, it is on life support at this point. So Larry Scott, he gets my majority of the pie chart of blame.
That's fair. Question two.
Number two.
Seahawks taking on the Eagles this upcoming Monday night. They had a rough go of it on Sunday, to the point where head coach Doug Peterson was asked if benching Carson Wentz in favor of Jalen Hurts was a possibility. Peterson said this would send the wrong message to his team. Wentz obviously struggling, Stacey. Would that be sending the wrong message to his team?
No. No, it would not. And maybe this is because we've been covering the Seahawks, and so we have that always compete mentality etched in our brain, but the reality is that every NFL team has a similar mentality and kind of similar way about them. But I think that you are in a division where despite you're leading, but it's essentially feels like a three-way tie at the top. You could lose it at any moment. And you can, you also still are right now the top seed in your own division. So right now you're a playoff team. If you want to focus on winning, you bench what's not helping you win. So sending the right message to the team is saying, hey, I'm focused on getting to the postseason. I'm focused on winning. I don't care what our record is. Right now we have a spot and we're hanging on to it. If Carson Wentz isn't helping us get there, we're going to go with Jalen Hurts. And the message is, it's the team that's getting there. It's not about Carson. It's not about his feelings. It's about getting the team there. I think it would be sending the wrong message if it felt like an experiment of sorts, right? If you had the season on the line and it felt like they were just kind of testing it to see what it looked like. Oh, we wanted to get Jalen some reps in there and you feel like it's a throwaway game. This is about finding a way to win consistently. And right now, Carson Wentz isn't giving you that.
If there's a head coach in the NFL that knows the kind of boost a backup quarterback can give your roster, it should be Doug Peterson, head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, who won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles backing
Bear
up
down.
Carson Wentz. Bear down
Bear
every
down.
Single day. Had to get that in. My Wildcats took a massive L over the weekend. But
go Dogs.
If there's a head coach in the NFL that should understand what changing a quarterback midseason can do for a team, it has to be Doug Peterson. I don't understand his desire to just dig his heels in on Carson Wentz and go forward with him as the starter. It makes zero sense with how bad he has played this season. Maybe Jalen Hurts just isn't ready for those bright lights of Monday night, but to continue on with Carson Wentz as your quarterback right now, when he is so obviously struggling, it's insanity right now. I don't get it at all.
What's wrong with Carson Wentz? Does he have an injury I don't know about? I mean, I'm not like
Maybe.
Following the Eagles closely. I will admit that I'm not a diehard Eagles fan, but it seems like he fell off a cliff.
Oh, yeah. He was an MVP candidate in 2017
yes.
before he got injured. There were those reports that the locker room had kind of turned on him, and they were big fans of Nick Foles, the Eagles players, and they had sort of favored Nick Foles over Carson Wentz when they were both healthy. So maybe the locker room still hasn't exactly repaired itself in favor of Carson Wentz. Maybe, you know, that's just a little bit of detective work.
But if they move on from Wentz to Jalen Hurts, that really hurts for Carson Wentz.
Tarek,
yeah.
That's enough. That's enough for me so far.
Thank you.
I'll allow it. I will allow it.
Fair enough.
Good job. But that's it. That's your pun limit
for
the next 10 minutes.
We'll cap it there. Yeah.
Next.
Number three.
Question three, Joe Burrow. We just got the news, actually, from Adam Schefter and Bengals reporter Ben Baby. Burrow tore his ACL, MCL, and suffered other structural issues in his knee. It's going to be a long time before we see him on an NFL field again. How insane is it that Russell Wilson still has yet to miss a start in his NFL career?
It is flabbergasting that he has not missed a start. In fact, every time it is so rare an ability he has to just be available that even when you feel like it's just coming up, and knock on all the wood in the studio right now. But like, Curtis, sometimes when you see Russell Wilson just like hesitate for a second or take a split second to get up, sometimes it's just he's been knocked down six times in a game. But my heart stops because you just keep thinking like, no way. No way. But, I mean, he spends a lot of money on trying to stay healthy and on his recovery.
Yeah, there was that report that he spends over $1 million a year on just recovery and staying healthy, taking a page out of LeBron, who also does the same thing. And I mean, look at LeBron. He's never had really a season-ending injury or anything like that. And he's in year, what, 17, year 18 now. Imagine Russell Wilson playing 18, 19 years in the NFL, mm-hmm. never having missed a start, never having had any sort of injury that would hold him out for an entire season. I mean, this is just an incredible run of durability that very few quarterbacks ever get to experience. I mean, heck, even Tom Brady has missed a full season. Peyton Manning missed a full season here and there. Brett Favre is really the only one that did not miss any sort of extended time. He missed a couple of starts at the end of his mm-hmm. career. But Russell Wilson, I mean, just a tremendous testament to how he takes care of himself. And especially the amount of hits he takes as a quarterback,
right?
too. Clear, always insane. Among the league leaders. It's absurd that he has stayed healthy through this number of years of his career. Shout out to him, and shout out to his just ability to stay healthy.
And this
healthy.
Is the thing that people are always worried about with a smaller quarterback, too. Like, this is what they said about Kyler Murray. Like, how can he stay healthy? And Russell Wilson has been able to. I can't keep talking about it because it's making me feel like we're going to jinx it. And again, don't worry, listeners. I see people saying knock on wood. We're knocking on wood, okay? Look, we're being safe here. Let's get back to Joe Burrow, though. He was having a phenomenal start to his rookie season, well on pace to break a couple NFL rookie records. And the big criticism facing Cincinnati now is that they spent so much money, draft capital really, but look at it like money, on their investment, on their piece, their quarterback for the future, and almost nothing on the pieces protecting him in that offensive line. And my heart breaks for him. That's an awful business decision. I know sometimes you have the draft capital to make a move like that, and you don't have enough space to protect him yet, right? It happens. It is rare that you're able to get a number one draft pick in your quarterback, and then you've also got the best offensive line around him. But Cincinnati really didn't take the right steps there to do that. And Joe Burrow, Curtis, might be like the most well-liked rookie quarterback in the league. I mean, it just, everyone, his heart was breaking for him. So, okay, we're going to bring Jake on with us. He's going to join us. We had some tech issues. We thank you guys for being patient. We really, really appreciate it. We're also going to have Mike Salk joining us next. We'll talk to him about this upcoming stretch of games for the Seattle Seahawks and this past weekend. And then we've got the Pac-12 season. Oh, yeah, I've got a lot to say about BYU. That's coming up next on Jake and Stacey.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Joining us now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, how are you?
I'm great, Stacey. Happy Thanksgiving week.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving week. Speaking of, we're not going to get to it in this bit that we're going to talk about here, but news just breaking that the Baltimore Ravens, who are set to play on Thanksgiving against the undefeated Steelers, had multiple members of the organization, not sure if it's players or not, test positive. So they shut down their facilities. So could be a little wrench thrown in those Thanksgiving game plans. We'll be keeping an eye on that for all of you guys. Mike, I want to quickly, we're going to talk about the rest of the NFL, but I want to go back to the Seahawks. I know they played Thursday night, and we had a relatively stress-free Sunday because of that. But we're looking ahead at the next four games specifically. And Jake said something interesting, which was it feels like it's a chance for the Seahawks to have the preseason they didn't have. And he didn't mean necessarily that, oh, it's just a bunch of, like, you know, a cupcake schedule or whatever. I think what he meant was you have a chance in late in the season, which you would never normally have, to build chemistry and to get right. And you never normally get that chance. When you're looking at these next 4 weeks, what kind of opportunity do you see for the Seahawks?
Well, I think what you're trying to do is give yourself margin for error, right? I mean, the end of the season will be challenging again. You're going to have to play the Rams again. You're going to have to play the Niners again. And while the Niners don't look as formidable as they once did, you know they're going to be getting up for that game to end the year. So what can you do in these next 4 weeks against essentially bad East Coast teams, right? You're going to face the Eagles, the Giants, the Jets, and Washington. Four NFC and AFC East teams that are not good. You got to sweep that. So while I understand the sort of this is your chance to gain chemistry, this, that, and the other, I don't think you can mess around here. This is where you pad your schedule. This is where you pad your stats. This is where you give yourselves that margin for error to maybe lose one more time to the Rams just in case, right? Just in case you're not able to turn things around the last time. I think this is where you kind of make your season here. So I think these are really, really important stretch of games for the Seahawks.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm looking kind of – we're going to talk about the NFC, AFC. There's been an interesting kind of turn of events where the NFC suddenly is the weaker conference. It feels like that happened overnight. And do you think – this is an interesting question that Curtis Rogers asked me, and I'm not quite sure I know how to answer. Is it now more frustrating if the Seahawks don't at least get to the championship when you've had an NFC like you've never had before?
Yes. I mean, I watched a lot of football yesterday. Green Bay is not a great team. They're not a bad team. They're a pretty good team, but they're not a great team. You saw it. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is still a very, very good player, but he's been shown now to be mortal. That team around him is not spectacular. Indy did everything in their power to lose that game and still found a way to win it because Green Bay tried even harder to lose that game. They're not a great team. And the Rams are not a great team. They seem to have your number, but they're not a great team. Arizona's not a great team. The whole East stinks. Tampa Bay has Tom Brady, but they're widely flawed. New Orleans doesn't have their quarterback. I mean, yeah, the NFC is very, very, very flawed. So I think your path
right
to getting
now.
To who is? I mean, I actually think the best team in the league, Pittsburgh, I know, has the 9-0 record, and I know that Tennessee hasn't played well the last couple of weeks. And if Tennessee had a better quarterback, I'd feel more comfortable saying this, but I think the Titans are as good as anybody in the league. I think they have the best overall roster in the league with a very good head coach and Mike Vrabel. So the fact that they have Ryan Tannehill as their quarterback is the one missing ingredient. I mean, he's not bad, but he's not an elite quarterback. If they had one, I would feel very comfortable calling the Titans the most complete team in the NFL.
Is that because you love a good running game? You are kind of a throwback classic dude when it comes to football. I mean, it is hard for me not to think this is because of Derrick Henry, Mike.
Well, it's complete, though. I mean, like, yes, Derrick Henry is a beast, and the run he had to win that game yesterday was awesome, but it wasn't the best play in that game. The best play in the game was made by Brown, the wide receiver, who takes that ball and just keeps knocking dudes over like he's a running back. I mean, that looked like a lot of what we saw with San Francisco last year. And they're great wide receiving core and they're tight ends and guys who can take the ball and then do things after the catch, play physical football, complementary football. They got a very good defense in Tennessee. I know Kansas City is probably the best team in the league because of their quarterback and because of the strength of that offense. But if anybody in the AFC is going to beat them, you know, I think Tennessee's got as good a shot as anybody. And then obviously you got Buffalo and you got Pittsburgh. I mean, that's a pretty darn good conference all of a sudden. Even the Raiders look pretty good, despite everybody leaving them for dead a couple of years ago after they traded a couple of their best players. And, oh, look where we are a few years later. They look like a good football team again. It's amazing how acquiring all those draft picks at the top of the draft will make you better, and it has.
Salk, I was getting a chance to listen to Stacey ask you questions and hearing your responses while I was trying to connect here. Gotta love technical issues here. But I wanted to follow up on, you know, what Stacey said at the beginning of, you know, the next 4 weeks being really pivotal for this team to turn themselves into a legitimate championship caliber team. I think that when you look at the way that they're building or what they did against the Rams at the second half, what they did against the Arizona Cardinals, now you look at the next four games. I mean, this is going to be a really interesting stretch for them in terms of how can they grow, how can they get better, specifically on defense. If this group doesn't get better with the next 4 weeks playing against the NFC East and playing against some, you know, pretty bad offenses, what do you think that says about Ken Norton Jr. and Pete Carroll in terms of this defense and trying to get it right?
Well, Pete would never let me answer that question if I were him, right? If I were on his staff, he'd say, well, we don't think that way. We think about how we are going to get better, not what it means if we don't. Because I think the implication there, Jake, is exactly what you said. If they can't find a way to get right against the dregs that they're going to face here in the next 4 weeks, how do you expect them to find a way against Aaron Rodgers? How do you expect them to find a way against Drew Brees if he returns, or against Tom Brady, or against the quarterbacks that they're going to end up having to face in the playoffs, or even before you get there, just against Jared Goff and the Rams when they face them in the second to last game of the season? They've got to use this opportunity to get right, but really they just need to find ways to just keep winning. Pad your stats. Give yourself the margin for error. Make sure that you know how that you just bank the W. So yeah, they have the opportunity to maybe be more experimental, to vary up their defenses, to work on their chemistry, to find ways to just work together better. But they just got to win games, man. Just keep winning ball games to set yourself up for the end of this season.
Yeah, that is for certain. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, right? It's about wins. It doesn't matter about how it comes. But obviously, I think in this profession of what we do, we like to nitpick. We like to look at some of the things that they are doing or what they're not doing well. And hopefully we can look at these next 4 weeks and see, you know, a legitimate building process before our eyes. Mike, as you got a chance to sit back and relax because there's not a Seahawks game this Sunday and watch around the NFL, who were some teams that really, really stood out to you as you got a chance to watch?
Yeah, I mentioned one of them earlier is Tennessee. I really like that Tennessee Titans football team. I love watching them play. I love the style, love the grit, love the identity. They really have
even
taken with, on
even
the
with bad defense.
Yeah, but they take on the personality of that head coach. I mean, the defense isn't what it was supposed to be this year, but I do think that if they work together as a group, I want their defense to be better than it is. But I think that's a pretty good, complete football team. I watched Kansas City and the Raiders last night. Obviously, Kansas City still, you know, right there among the best in the league. But I'm really impressed with what John Gruden and Mike Mayock have done. They've built a football team, again, without a great quarterback. And by the way, same with Tennessee. Those are two teams that have found ways to compete without elite franchise quarterbacks, guys who can just get it done in Tannehill and Carr. So both of them stand out. And then we talked about Green Bay. Good, but not great. Right? I mean, you watch Aaron Rodgers. Am I the only one who was sort of annoyed seeing Aaron Rodgers kind of laughing and joking after the game with Philip Rivers right after he had lost in overtime?
Yes.
I mean, I know it's because his guy fumbled instead of him throwing a game-losing pick or something like that. But for whatever reason, first of all, I don't like Aaron Rodgers, so it's sort of easy to be annoyed by him. But seeing him just sort of laughing and joking around on the field, I know we criticize Brady and others when they've run off the field without shaking hands. So we want that level of sportsmanship, but I can't help it. I just get annoyed seeing the laughing and chuckling and camaraderie right after the game on the field. You want to go have a dinner with Philip Rivers later? Fine. You want to go be godfather to his 29 kids afterwards? Fine. Cool. Knock yourself out. But I don't need the laughing and joking. And to me, it fits perfectly with Aaron Rodgers last year quitting on his team right before halftime of the NFC Championship game against the Niners when he decided, yeah, we're not good enough, I'm done. And so I don't know. I don't like Aaron Rodgers.
That's fair. That's very fair. All right, Mike Salk, you can hear him every single weekday at 12:30 right here on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Do you guys have a pod this week, Mike?
We will, yes. Brock and I are recording tomorrow morning, and we will have lots of important observations for everybody, I promise.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you guys.
All right, coming up next, the Pac-12 season taking a bit of a hit with the Apple Cup canceled, and now BYU, your BYU Cougars, Jake, too scared of the Washington Huskies. We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Take a look at Pac-12 football. The Apple Cup has officially been canceled for the first time since World War II. Feels weird not having it over Thanksgiving weekend. Washington then without an opponent for this weekend, now looking for one. There was a bit of a controversy yesterday, and I'll tell you why. Washington, according to Pyle Bonagura for ESPN, reached out to BYU about scheduling a game this week. If you guys remember, ADs in the Pac-12 approved non-conference opponent scheduling after a series of games in the Pac-12 were canceled. That was originally not something they were going to do, and then after five games had to be postponed, rescheduled, or canceled, Pac-12 ADs met together, voted on approving non-conference games. So now this is officially an option. Washington reaches out to BYU, and according to Kyle, BYU has so far resisted. And the reasoning would be that BYU presumably waiting to see where they're going to rank on the college football AP rankings. And then if they need to play an opponent, say they're low and they want a quality opponent in there, Curtis, tell me if I'm getting this right, then they'll want to play Washington. If they're satisfied with their ranking and their ranking is not lower than they were expecting, they don't want to play Washington. You know why, Jay? Because they're scared. Because they don't want to face an opponent that will trash their ranking. Ooh. And even though BYU, ironically, tweeted out like any opponent, anytime, any place, an ill-advised tweet in a week where you are certainly not willing to play any opponent, anytime, any place. And I've seen the weak arguments and excuses. I am a former Husky, by the way, in case you couldn't tell. I've seen the excuses of like, well, you know, BYU doesn't have to play these guys. I mean, you really don't want to plan a game with Washington that could be canceled at the last minute. It's just, it's not that we're afraid to play the Huskies. It's that the scheduling is so inconvenient.
Why would you? That is a legitimate factor.
You're right.
In this.
If you're BYU, if you're BYU,
why would you? If you know that you're going to potentially be right where you want to be in the college football playoff ranking, then a game with UW doesn't really matter. Sorry to tell UW fans. UW fans want this game more or need this game more than BYU does. I mean, BYU's already played eight, nine games already. They've had their season. Of course, they would want to play more. But when you have a team in UW that will not commit fully to playing this game, right? So BYU won't commit because UW and the Pac-12 might have to turn around and say, you know what, sorry, never mind, because we're still trying to figure out if the Utah game is still going to go on. If they have a cancellation, then the Pac-12 is going to be the ones that are going to step in and say, no, you're not going to have a game, but with BYU, we actually need you to play Utah. So I think there are a couple other factors that are playing itself here. But also, trust me, no one wants this game more than me. I want to see UW play. I want to play BYU. I want to see Zach Wilson go up against the Washington defense. This would be an opportunity for him to really put a statement on his draft stock. But I think that there's more at play here than just BYU saying, I don't know if we really want to play you anytime, anywhere, anyplace.
There absolutely is more at play here, which is that BYU doesn't want to look bad. They don't want to face Washington and risk being embarrassed, Jake. That's exactly what this is.
This has nothing to do with it. You guys beat Arizona 30-something to zero.
Bear down.
And you guys are acting. Curtis, I apologize here, but Arizona gets absolutely smacked by UW. But what did Curtis tell us? What did Curtis tell us
about Arizona?
You don't want to
face an undefeated team.
I told you guys exactly how that game was going to go on Saturday. I said Washington better beat Arizona comfortably or else there's going to be some big trouble. They did that. My problem with Husky fans right now is them thinking a win over BYU would all of a sudden propel them into the national title picture. You aren't even ranked here right now.
Who thinks that?
And a win over Arizona is not impressive, okay? A beatdown win against the worst team in the Pac-12, I get to say that because I'm an Arizona alum, is no selection committee at all on Saturday. I'm sorry, but that's just how it is.
A win over Arizona, the Washington Huskies did what you're supposed to do every weekend, which is take the trash out. You got that done. Bear down, Curtis. Against BYU, I don't know any Husky fan that realistically thinks it's going to propel you into like a national college football playoff conversation or ranking. What it is you want a good game. We want to play. We want to face someone. The Apple Cup isn't happening anymore. Give us a good opponent. And BYU is thinking, we don't want a good opponent. We would very much like
that's
to
not
stay
what they're
right
thinking.
Where we are. I don't want to mess
that
this
has,
up. I don't want to risk
that
doing
has
that.
Nothing, that has nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. And like I said before, BYU doesn't need this game. If their college football ranking puts them in a spot where a game against Washington would boost their overall rank to a spot where they need to be, guess what? They would want to play that game and will want to play that game. But as I said before, I think that there is that factor. And I do agree. Don't put out anytime, anywhere, any place if you don't actually mean it.
You don't want
okay?
to do
like,
it.
That's just, it's like we put that out there and then UW calls the next segment and you're like, wait a second. Well, what we meant was,
you know, I got this thing going on next Saturday.
That's right.
I'm not going to be
I
able
can't
to make it.
Do it. I'm so sorry.
No, I think the headband.
I'm washing
said
my hair that night.
I want to see this game happen really, really badly. But to me, this does not make BYU cowards. This does not make BYU running scared. BYU doesn't need this game. UW does need this game. They want this game, for a national standing. BYU is very hyped up. I'm actually really surprised how much hype they have gotten because the only real game that they have played is against Boise State, and they blew them out. They've looked great. Quarterback Zach Wilson, I've been a huge fan of his, you know, from the very beginning as a freshman. But to me, it's not a game that BYU needs. UW needs this game. They if they don't have this game, what is their season going to be? It's going to be, what, a three-game, four-game season
undefeated.
At the most?
Undefeated.
I mean, so UW is more desperate to have this game than BYU is, and BYU is not going to commit to something unless UW is willing to fully commit to their playing their schedule. Why would BYU waste their time if UW or the Pac-12 is just going to step in and take the game away?
UW wants to play this game. UW is down to play this game.
So why don't they sign a contract securing the game? They will not do that yet.
Because BYU is too scared, Jay. BYU doesn't want to face them. That's what the problem is.
If they're already in a spot where they are highly ranked, where they need to be for the playoffs, who would play them? I don't think Alabama would be doing it. I don't think UW would be doing it. I think BYU is very much in a position where they are holding all the cards, and UW's trying to get into the party.
Now, Curtis, you're a little more on top of the rescheduling. There's been a lot of changes since then. The Apple Cup was like more recently officially canceled, so there's been a lot since then. So the news that BYU is ducking the Huskies isn't the latest development. There's also a chance, correct me if I'm wrong, that Washington could just be rescheduled and face Utah this weekend?
Yes. Okay. Because Utah and ASU were scheduled to play, and ASU obviously dealing with the COVID outbreak. On last we heard, it was the entire defensive side of the ball that either had it or was coming to close contact. So because of that, Utah is also kind of looking for an opponent right now, and because of how the Pac-12 has tried to keep it within conference this season, Utah would take precedent over BYU in terms of UW's schedule the rest of the season here.
All right. And Dave Wyman will be joining us to talk about some power ranking for contenders in the NFC. But first, you guys, we got good news. The Professor John Clayton continues on 710 ESPN Seattle. You can catch his daily hits with Danny and Gallant each morning at 7:15 and with Wyman and Bob every afternoon at 4. You can also continue to follow John's work online at 710sports.com. As a reminder, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Wyman joins us next.